Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thank you so much.
Back, starting a new Iron Man streak right now.
Are we talking about alcohol?
No. Talking about I think we did four in a row.
Oh,
back to back, okay. to back. So it's time to start today, starting another Iron Man streak.
We would still be on it if it wasn't for me. I'm the one that blew it.
You went to Europe.
I did go to Europe.
Did you love every second?
Dude, I cannot get enough.
What was the highlight?
Well, the purpose of the trip was my brother's in the army and he's stationed in northern Italy, like outside of Venice. So the purpose of the trip was to go visit him. And I was actually traveling with my mom. So it was she and I. And we decided to do a week in Portugal prior because we had Portuguese blood. So we did a week in Portugal, a week in Italy.
You're Portuguese?
Yeah, quarter.
Who knew? Oh, you're a quarter Portuguese?
Yeah.
Is this a big reveal?
No, it's not.
Do you talk about it regularly?
No, I've never talked about it, but it's not that interesting.
Kind of. In the context of surface interesting, it makes me totally think of you in a different way.
Okay, even more.
I have
more,
you as a Brazilian now.
Even more related to surf. My grandfather was actually born in Kauai.
Okay.
So his parents were Portuguese and came over to work the sugarcane as like basically indentured servants.
So you could go basically to the North Shore and really pound your chest and claim.
I could.
Like, ho, brah.
For sure.
You could own.
I don't know, though. Would they? He was born there, but his parents weren't. Like, they just came over.
Yeah, but I think the Hawaiian Portuguese thing is legit. Okay. I mean, I don't. Obviously, it's not Hawaiian legit, but it's, I think, in terms of the folk who came, I mean,
yeah.
I think the Portuguese one is a legitimate claim. You could paddle right to the heart of Pipe and just sit there and splash off all the howlies.
Or better yet, Kauai.
Yeah. Oh, you, it's pine
Kauai
trees?
Local status. Well, and if you ever met my grandfather, he felt Hawaiian. Like,
yeah.
It just, he seemed like he was from Hawaii. Like, he spoke, so he grew up in, I think until he was about 8 in Kauai, ended up on Oahu and was there when they bombed Pearl Harbor. And he told stories about, like, it was the first time they had ever seen airplanes. And he just hung out with a bunch of ruffian kids. Like, he didn't own a pair of shoes until he graduated high school, just full on, like, local kid, you know, with no money or anything, growing up in poverty, and joined the Navy, lied about his age, joined the Navy when he was 16, ended up in Long Beach, and that's where he met my grandmother, and
that was,
they
it
started a life there. So that's where my family was kind of
man
based.
So you're Brazilian Hawaiian
Portuguese Hawaiian.
That is pretty amazing. I'm gonna start calling you David Lee.
There you go. I wish I could lie about, like, do the lineage thing to join the Olympics, surf in the Olympics, except Portugal has
more great
surfers.
You're screwed.
So I've got no chance.
Yeah, you're screwed. I'm surprised, to be honest, that an Italo or who's lower down? Who's a great Brazilian surfer lower down?
David Silva.
Yeah, David. How are they not just swapping over to Portugal?
Yeah, they should.
I mean, it'd be an easy one.
So this is completely coincidental, but JP Curry did that ranking of Beach Grit contributors at one point.
Yeah.
And he compared me to Thiago Perez without even knowing my lineage.
Epic. The Portuguese Tiger.
Yeah.
That's you. You should take the moniker Portuguese Tiger. I mean, he's not using it anymore.
The Portuguese Tiger among podcasters.
Yeah.
I mean, that
should be what your mantle is, excuse me.
Well, so I'll tell you what the low light of my trip was. I'll give you highlights too, but the low light, since we're talking about military, visiting my brother's post like their base in Italy.
Depressing.
So freaking depressing.
There's something about the military, any military base I've ever been on, it's like they do it on purpose, I think. Because it can't even be accidental depression. No. I mean, the color tones they use, the building materials they choose, every element of a U.S. military base puts you in such a slumpy state of bummer. I mean, does it just make you almost want to kill yourself and so you go out to the battlefield and don't care if you die? Because it's
I don't almost know better if that's than going back intention. To the base. I mean, I think the intention is to strip away any sense of individuality that you have, like basically break you down so that they could build you up.
Which I get maybe at a Camp Pendleton or at a training facility, but on base, like what the heck? Why do those people just need to live in a depressed pit? Does it depress your brother? Or is he just used to it?
I would say so. I don't know that he could make that assessment of himself, but I think it kind of does. The thing is, you're in Italy. It's beautiful. Like my mom and I, before we connected with him, it's like we're in Venice, we're in Florence, all these beautiful cities, beautiful architecture, all the art focused. And then you drive out to this terrible area. It's gloomy. And then it looks like a prison. It's built by the same people who build prisons to that aesthetic. So you go into the gates. They live in barracks. We went into the room, his room. It's like basically a dorm room.
Like a cinder block kind of wall.
Fully.
Painted some kind of drab.
Fully.
Green or gray.
And what else is sad is my younger brother's 27, but most of the people there are early 20s. And you don't realize how young they are, like until you're there. Like walking onto the base and seeing these guys walking around stern-faced, like they're badasses, but they're children.
Yeah, babies.
If you saw them just at the beach, you'd be like, oh, that's a teenager, you know, or whatever. And they've committed their life to this thing and this whole, I don't know, mentality. It's really, really bizarre to me because I've lived my entire life with freedom, thanks to them, obviously, and impunity to make decisions that I want to make and pursue whatever career path I want to pursue and live where I want to live. So to see that level of structure and regimented kind of discipline that's enforced by some other authority, it's like, oh my gosh, shock to my system.
So that was the low light.
I'd say
the actual visit, I mean, being on barracks.
And he's great, and like we had a great time together, but like seeing that was really depressing.
Is he allowed to drink?
Yeah.
They're allowed to drink off or on?
Off. So that's the problem is a lot of them are coming from states where you're not allowed to drink till you're 21. And they end up there in Italy at 19, 20 years old.
Raging.
With a weekend off, money in their pocket, alcohol's cheap. Yeah, and they just go nuts.
Do they feel that they're lucky, the ones out there? Do they think we got a cush posting to be posted in northern Italy as opposed to, say, I don't know, I mean, the Middle East, Afghanistan? Yes,
they do, but they also don't fully, a lot of them don't have a cultural appreciation. You know, it's like specific stories. One of the guys is like from Kentucky and just doesn't even know, like shows up to like a local Italian restaurant and it's basically saying, where's the cheeseburger and the French fries?
Yeah.
You know, and the Bud Light. Why don't you have Bud Light on tap?
Sweet.
You know?
Amazing.
So there's a culture shock thing. I don't think, but regardless of how much context they have going into the experience, I think it enriches their life.
Sure.
Period.
Yeah.
Just living in a different country.
Being overseas in any capacity, I think is at least changes you.
Totally. But let's talk alcohol.
Yeah.
Alcohol's so inexpensive. I don't get drunk on it while I'm there. Like I drink, afternoon Aperol spritz in Italy, like two, let's say, down a pizza with it, walk around a bit, go to dinner, drink a bottle of wine between two or three people, feel perfectly fine going home, walking home, feel perfectly fine in the morning. Then I get back home Monday night late, Tuesday, I drink half a bottle of wine by myself, feel terrible afterwards. Yeah,
it's the sulfites, man.
Is it the sulfites?
I don't know, to be honest.
I don't know either.
I think part of it is that when you're over in Europe, I mean, silly and American as a thing, or this is a silly American thing to say, but everything just feels better, right? I mean, the food tastes better, the booze tastes better, all of it tastes better. So let's just assume that it's not. Let's assume that it's all the same. But what you're doing over there, you're spending all your time walking or moving and all this kind of stuff where, I mean, I think, you know, typically, when I'm over anywhere in Europe, I'm either walking or biking or something miles a day, totally. Right? And then on top of that, you know, you're eating better food and then drinking, I'm just going to say, better spirits.
Yeah. Better spirits. I don't think the alcohol percentage is any lower.
No.
But yeah, your body just processes it differently.
And I think you're just being active typically. And then when you're here, I mean, when I'm here, I'm as active as I am, but yeah.
If I'm here drinking, like I'm sitting on the sofa basically, either sitting through dinner and then sitting on the sofa afterwards.
What were you, what half bottle did you in yesterday?
It was actually Barolo, so Northern Italian wine as well, but from Trader Joe's.
Did you bring wine home? Do you bring wine home when you travel?
No.
It's a hassle.
Total hassle. I try to travel with carry-ons only, too, and you can't bring more than 3 ounces, so no. And that's the other thing. Whenever I'm drinking wine in Europe, I just buy the cheapest. Like, what do you have by the craft?
Yeah.
That's what I want. It's so inexpensive, and it's always the best option.
Does it make you want to move to Europe?
Totally.
Do you feel the pull?
Dude, totally. I think my ideal scenario would be do a month in Europe every year, a month in Australia, and a month maybe in Hawaii every year.
A month in Hawaii? You're throwing Hawaii into
the winter time.
Like to surf?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right? Hawaii.
No?
Why not?
I wouldn't spend a no stinking month in Hawaii. I've spent months in Hawaii. I mean, God bless all you Hawaiians. And I'm doing you a big favor by staying off your islands, exactly like you want me to do.
Are you even allowed back?
Hell no. Yeah, I mean, I would, yeah, of all the places to live, if I was going somewhere, wanted to go somewhere warm and tropically, surf-wise, it would not be Hawaii.
Where would it be?
If I was moving somewhere purely to surf, only to surf, I'd probably move to Salina Cruz. Sorry, boys.
Really?
I'm going to blow out your secrets, yeah.
I mean, there's great waves. I just feel like you'd be super hot and humid and miserable all day.
You're just surfing, sunburn. Eating. Yeah. I mean, but I'm there for a month to surf, basically, right? I mean, you said you're going to be in Hawaii for a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's more to do in Hawaii.
I'm just surfing and eating tacos.
I know. I feel like it's I'd be burned month. To a crisp
sure.
in Mex, like within a week, and I'd be over.
Oh, it's so good. Have you been down there?
No. Not Salina to that Cruz? Part.
Yeah.
No.
It is fam. I know. Are we not supposed to blow up Salina Cruz anymore? Remember when I was at Surfing Magazine, the surfing staff, which I suppose I was part of, got in big, giant trouble for claiming Salina Cruz or something. There was like letters flying up from Salina Cruz heavy locals, like surfing is banned from Salina Cruz. And it just made me scratch my head thinking, how in the world are they banned? Well, how do you enforce the ban?
First of all, I think it's already blown. So I don't think us saying anything.
Isn't it blown?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Rip Curl did a search event there.
But this was all after the search event.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, years and years after the search event.
Yeah, but I think that they have restrictions. Like, you have to be staying at the resorts or something. Isn't there that?
To surf the good waves,
yeah.
it's a great system, I think. I mean, or my experience there was great. You basically pay for a surf guide, so you're contributing to the local economy. If you show up by yourself, I think you could get hassled or in trouble. But if you're there, you know, with a surf guide... that you're paying, then I think it's, you know, maybe not no problem everywhere, but I think no problem everywhere that his zone is or that surf guide, which I think that's awesome. I think that
makes sense.
And it's great, right? Like you as a traveling, if you have enough money to get to Salina Cruz, you should be contributing to the local economy.
Yeah.
And that's a way to do it.
Yeah.
It works well.
In regard to moving to Europe, I'm always jealous of people who do make big radical changes in their life.
Yeah.
But my life has just been too dang comfy in Southern California.
You could blow it up so very easily. You've got nothing, literally nothing holding you back.
Wow, thanks. I feel great about myself.
But it's true. Nothing. What's holding you back?
Nothing.
Exactly.
Oh, no, I'll tell you in my head what the anchors are. It's like...
Family.
My family's all local. I've got a job that I like. Like, I've got access to whatever I want, whenever I want. If I want to go travel somewhere, I can pretty much do it.
But you also pretend that with your family back here that they were somehow still in the day and age of steamships. You could live in Europe and fly out like you...
Well, the funny thing is they don't even care. Yeah, like they would all be like, yeah, go for a year or two. Who cares?
And you could come back and visit them just as much.
Totally.
I mean,
and they'd come visit.
Sure. They'd be way more happy. They'd have more reason to go to Europe.
Yeah.
Okay, so where would you live in Europe?
South of France.
For sure. Hossiger?
Would
you live coastal or would you live... I mean, would you live Mediterranean or Atlantic side?
So when I say south of France, I always think of like wine regions, Provence, southern Rhone, like that I love, but I would want to surf more. So maybe, Hossiger area, Biarritz.
So why don't you? You could literally, I'm going to overuse literally today because you could literally do your job in Hossiger.
Yeah. I know.
I mean, there's as big a surf industry there as, I mean, it'd be no problem.
Yeah.
Be no problem.
All right.
Husker also, just to throw a little more at you, Husker is ridiculously cheap housing.
Really?
Basically free.
Hmm.
When I was there last.
Okay.
Just a couple years ago. Yeah, but it was like pennies on the dollar for any kind of rental, like even big houses where you could rent for cheap.
So, okay, I guess my other thought is I want to see a lot of other parts of the world. So like when I went to Australia, I felt the same way about Australia, right? But what's great about Southern California is all of the economic opportunities. So one benefit is stay in Southern California and then you can go visit all of those places. I worry about committing to like a lower income area and then not being able to then travel once you're there.
But there's also less money. But there's also something about actually locking into a place and not just being a perpetual tourist, right? To actually experience life differently somewhere else outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love the women there too.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I don't know what's holding you back. I don't know why you're not on a plane next week, except for our Iron Man streak.
Our podcast.
We'll be okay. We could figure it out though.
You do know the reason why I'm not is because I'm so freaking conservative.
But wouldn't it feel good? It sounds like a Netflix movie. Just David Lee Scales throwing caution to the wind.
The Portuguese tiger visits. Yeah,
visits his home country. I mean, it really does. Like the conservative man who decides, you know, phooey, enough of this conservative life. I'm doing it. Everyone, I'm doing it.
I know. So the reality is I know that would benefit my life so much. Like the exact thing that I need is to get outside of my comfort zone.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I have no excuse.
No excuse.
So I won't see you next week then. Okay. I was going to say we'll record again, but no.
I mean, you really should pull the trigger like quick like that. Like get out of your apartment. I mean, you could even keep your apartment for pretty sake. You probably sublet your apartment, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Probably got a buddy that could move in. And
for sure.
Yeah.
Are you drinking this month?
Of course.
You're back on.
Yeah, okay, cool. Of course. Please. All right. Please.
Not like you took a break last month.
Yeah. Well, the break was really, I was intermittently fasting drinking last month too.
That's right.
I really fell off the camel a lot.
You were taking 16 hours a day off of drinking?
Yes, which was a massive boon.
Getting benefits. All of your alcohol in 8 hours.
Exactly.
Smart.
Yep.
Last time I saw you was during our pirate stream.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it in retrospect?
Well, so that, I mean, it was great. I had fun doing it. I don't know that it was great for the listeners, but I think what it made me feel is, okay, the problem out of the gate that we realized within the first 2 minutes is that our stream was delayed behind the WSL stream. So we couldn't actually call live action. So then it did become like a 6-hour extended podcast, right? Riffing on what's happening. So, but I feel if we could align it, if we could figure out how to get that technical thing going, it'd be perfect.
I think we could get it within 5 seconds.
Yeah. And that's all we need. We need it within 5 seconds and we're good to go.
Yeah. I don't want to say it doesn't matter if it's the time is aligned but what I do think is that the biggest kind of value asset in that whole thing was being able to engage with the comment section in real time.
For sure.
That was more important than the stream being real time.
1,000%. And so, so that's what I, through that process, realizing what worked, that's what I loved about it. Being able to engage with the comment section in real time, bringing that to another level. And then also being able to riff. And so if we could just add being able to talk about the important moments as they happen.
Yeah.
Then I think we'd have a real slam dunk.
It was so fun.
I did watch. It was super fun, and it would be, and also bring more guests in. I mean, I think I feel it was very successful in terms of, okay, we need to do it again. I think we need to do it for Pipe, with guests and sorting out how to get the stream a little more synced.
Done. I'm in 100%.
Yep.
I had a ton of fun doing it. What I was concerned about is that we really wouldn't be able to fill the 6 hours.
Oh my goodness.
And we completely did. Like,
just you and I.
We could have gone longer. I was shocked at how freely it flowed.
The only reason we ended, I mean, I talked to a friend afterwards and he said, you just talked for 6 hours. Like, that is insane. Nobody does that. And I was thinking, well, yeah, but it wasn't hard. I mean, it's just like hanging out, having a drink with a friend and chatting surf.
The comment section made it a lot easier though.
For sure. Because
they're constantly like ribbing us, making fun, and providing new material.
Well, I mean, and there's so much gold in there that goes, I think, you know, when you're in the comment live, when you're there participating, is one thing, but when you get to talk about them live, it was a lot more. It made all those comments even funnier to me.
I had a blast, and then I was just kind of moving forward throughout the whole thing, not really thinking about what was happening, just looking ahead. And then for the next few days afterwards, people were DMing me like their favorite jokes.
Yeah.
They were just like, I can't believe when this happened or when you guys said this. And I was like, oh yeah, that was really funny.
Yeah.
It was classic.
No, we definitely need to, we need to raise the bar and redo for Pipe. I would say Portugal, but man, this stinking European contest time zone difference is miserable.
I was going to suggest, maybe we even talked about doing the France one for finals day. But what that would have amounted to is us this morning being up and meeting somewhere at 4 a.m.
4 a.m.? I mean, even earlier.
Yeah. Because I got up actually at 5:15 this morning to watch it, and I was late to the game. But I don't think, how do we keep our energy levels up at that point? Like, I'm okay with doing it, except it's our dynamic is going to be pretty slow.
Yeah. No, well, I think we got to hold for Pipe and give her hell for Pipe.
Okay.
I think we should even try to do... do more than just finals day.
Okay.
Like, maybe let's even go in for the elimination round. I mean, or opening, whatever it is. What's the opening day called? The seeding round.
Seeding round.
I love that. Right. I love how cultish the seeding round sounds.
I referenced it as full on cult. I know.
I got that from you, I think.
As a, the Handmaid's Tale is what it sounds
is.
Like.
It
you
is.
Know?
The seeding round. Everybody come out to the seeding round. Yeah.
Let's all watch the seeding take place.
Bizarre. But speaking of France, real quick.
Yeah, let's
Jay Flo, Jeremy Flores. Dude. First French winner at France, or for the CT.
What are your thoughts on Jay Flo?
I mean, I love Jay Flo.
Do you really?
I'm a big fan, yeah.
Why?
I just think he has a fun personality, like, and that's... It's fun, both interesting to watch, like when he gets mad or the way he interacts is he's not just a cardboard cutout, you know, vanilla, boring surfer. And then a long time ago, I can't remember what it was. I was supposed to be doing something with Quicksilver that was around him. So I got to hang out with him a bit and see him, you know, in his natural environment. And he's great. I mean, he's fiery and he just is who he is. Like, there's no, I feel, filter on the Jeremy Flores we see and who he is in real life. I love that he charges.
Yeah.
I love that he, you know, I really like the way he approaches surfing. Yeah. Fan. You're not a fan.
No, I am a fan actually. I love having him. I guess I like having him as a character on tour. What my one concern is that he doesn't add any innovation to the sport, to the direction that surfing is going. So to see him like make the final at Karamas this year, I was like, oh my gosh, are you serious? Because he has like a forehand carve. Well, we've been seeing that since Taylor Knox, you know, or way before Taylor Knox, but like, it's not that interesting. It doesn't add anything unless the waves are pumping. And at which point he's better than 30 surfers on tour, basically. But I do love that he has personality. Like him at Surf Ranch saying, this is a circus.
Exactly.
It's great. He's the only guy that said it, you know? And so he's important to have for those reasons, but I would love it if he surfed better, I guess, is what it comes to.
Surf better in small waves, is what you're saying.
Period. I mean, he gets barreled. He knows how to get barreled and find those waves at Hossiger. That's why he won today, but...
But also, at, like, J-Flo at Throaty Chopu, at Big Pipeline. Yeah,
he's got balls.
Yeah, at the box. Like, there's... I mean... I want to watch him as much as anybody, right? If it's going to be big and critical, put Jeremy Flores in the heat and you'll be entertained.
Agreed. But how often do we get that? Three times a year at the most?
Three times
for
a year.
One day?
Which is a strange part about the tour, I suppose. Well, I mean, that's the thing, though, is Jeremy's a now, they love to say it over and over in the WSL broadcast, a veteran, right?
Yeah.
So he comes almost from a different era.
He's a veteran at age 31.
Yeah, a veteran. The old grizzled hack, Jeremy Flores.
Because he qualified when he was like 20.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah. So what was interesting about this event, though, is guys like him, Ace Buchan.
Just doing yeomans.
Lame, old workhorses.
Just pounding nails out there in the sun.
I don't know that it's great for the sport.
No, I mean, well, that's the whole thing, though, is they need to cut the draw. If you don't want your Jeremy Floreses again, I mean, I don't know how many times we can say it. in different ways, but they the only way to do that is cut the draw. Like, those are still the best surfers in the world, right? There's nobody on the QS. I mean, maybe...
That's what's sad to me, is precise, that those are the best surfers.
But then cut the draw down. Just admit.
Exactly.
Admit that there's 16, like, really, really primo surfers in the world, and no more. But again, it breaks the pyramid scheme. It knocks out... It kicks the house of cards right over.
You know, I had an epiphany watching this event. Leonardo Fioravanti is J-Flow 2.0.
Oh, yeah. Nice big carbs. Gets barreled.
Similar approach.
Gutsy. Gutsy young man, too.
Gutsy. Like, he'll go on the big days. He'll post a couple of sevens. He'll do a big forehand carve. He does have a couple more airs than J-Flow does. But that's it.
Let's talk about Calohandino real quick.
Tell him. Yeah, I didn't get to see his...
What's going on in Kolohe's mind right now? Kolohe was number one.
Talk me through it.
Kolohe was number one. Kolohe was in the Jeep yellow leaderboard jersey. Is that what it's called? Yellow board leader Jeep jersey?
I think that's Jesus, exactly
jersey
what it's
Jeep
called.
Jeep yellow. The jersey Jeep yellow. And not, what, three events ago. And has slid down. Now he's sitting at number five, right?
Yeah, he had 2/17 at the last two events, and I don't know where he finished this one.
And so he was poised, theoretically, for the first time in his career, John Florence, out of the way. Of course, Gabe is always going to be a threat, but Kolohe was poised to make a run, and now is only sliding one spot at a time down the scale. Can't imagine that Portugal will do him any favors. Probably another spot, and he'll I'm going to say he's likely to be lucky to end in the top 10, and to have the feeling like you had a shot at it, right?
Yeah.
And then just to end in the top 10 would be, I would think, pretty disappointing. I would think, if I was Kolohe, how am I ever going to win this thing? I'm never going to get over Gabe. I'm never going to get over myself, right? I mean, Kolohe, to me, self-defeats as much as anyone on tour.
Do you personally think that he has what it takes to win a world title?
Yes, I think he...
Do you really?
I think physically, his ability-wise, he has what it takes to win a world title. And he can't put it together. He can't get out of his own way.
So I disagree. I think Kolohe's mental thing that you're analyzing is a reflection of him processing reality.
Like he just doesn't... But what? He has... I'm not saying he has the best air game in the world, but he has... Like, on tour, he can hang with anyone air-wise.
Yes.
Okay?
Well...
He chucks himself now.
I don't know that that's true. I think he's in the top... Like, maybe, like, there's a couple of guys that are better. Italo,
of course,
Gabriel, John.
A lot of people better, I think, on any given day in the air than Kolohe. But he, unlike Flores, he has a repertoire, yes, right?
For sure.
Or unlike Ace. So he's got the airs. He tuck himself now. He's no longer a chicken, right? I mean, he has gone at pipe. He's not the best in big waves, but he goes. He's no panda.
Correct.
Okay, so he goes. He's got a good rail game. Really, really above. So he has the pieces.
Yeah, but you're defining it for me right now. Is he's at the 90th percentile for all of those things, but he's not in the 100 for any of them.
Of course.
He's not the best at any one thing.
Of course, but that's...
Not competitively, like not only from the technical standpoint of doing those maneuvers, but not even competitively is he at the top.
Competitively is where, you know, he falls down. He has the skill. That's what I'm saying. He puts himself in place to win.
You're adding up a scenario for a top 10 finisher for the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, but he's better than a top. I think Kolohe's stuff is better than top 10.
Think about if he ends up at any event, like name an event on tour, and I can name somebody that'll... I can name three guys that'll beat him.
Sure, but at every event, yeah. I mean, he's a real...
So can he win like Parco one, where it's never winning an event?
Yes.
He just has to get second and thirds throughout the whole season.
If Kolohe built the proverbial house,
yeah,
as they say, if he just went second, third. Boom.
Which is what he was doing this year.
Precisely. And then he went 17-17, which is... Ouch.
But you could throw those away, I guess, right? You get two throwaways.
Okay, I was thinking about this morning. This throwaway thing really, really annoys me. It annoys me to no end. What really? Is the damn point? Like, I get throwing it away, but why don't they calculate it in real time? Because what is it? Are they wondering, oh, is a surfer going to maybe throw away his 9 instead of a 17? They know exactly what it is. I get the throwaway. But why can't it be calculated better in real time?
Well, because there's events to come. So we don't know that he's going to throw away the 2/17 because he might get a 33rd in the next event.
That's true. I guess I'm not mad anymore.
Yeah.
But Is it two that you get to toss?
In the past, it has been. I believe it still is.
Still two.
Yeah. And that makes sense to me just because there's so much with the ocean dealing with Mother Nature. There's so much unpredictable that you could be the best surfer in the world and still lose round one.
Yeah.
At any given venue. So it makes sense that you would throw two away. I don't know, dude. I think
I don't think Kalohe, you should be able to throw it anyway.
What's
that? I think you should be able to. You should have to wear all your scores. Every event should matter.
Well, I guess the reality is, I mean, what's the point if of everybody has to wear all their scores, then it all flushes out.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I hear what you're saying. They are calculating for somebody to have a shocker. But if you have a shocker, you had a shocker. You lost. Look at the Dodgers. They just had a full-on shocker. Best team in baseball all year long, all season long. Went out and had a one-game shocker. You're out of the playoffs. You don't get to scrub it.
Right. Well, so Kalohe, I think you cannot get by without winning events. Like, there's too many guys that are real world title contenders, from Gabriel, Felipe, Italo. I would throw Jordy and Julian into that mix as well.
I throw Jordy and Julian straight into Kalohe's mix. I mean, that's
they've been the Kalohe thing for like 5 or 6 years now. And so I think maybe this year is Kalohe like finding his footing in that top five scenario. Next year he strikes hard.
You think so?
I don't know.
I mean, I think that this year is going to do mental damage to Kalohe Andino. That is going to be he's going to have to go see a sports psychologist after this year and figure out how to get his head right if he wants to win or accept being a perpetual top five.
That's the plight of the comfy Southern Californian who made tons of money from an early age.
Yeah, maybe he just doesn't want it. Maybe he just has to look himself in the mirror and say, I honestly don't care enough.
He does want it.
I mean, I
want
to be fine. Just
don't have the natural grit that, like,
to go get it.
Yeah, that some of the guys have coming out of Brazil who don't have big sponsor contracts when they're 14.
I mean, imagine looking Gabriel Medina in the eye, knowing that that's what you got to. Not only do you have to climb over Felipe and Italo. Once you climb over those two mountains, you got Mount Gabe right there. You got to scale Mount Gabe for the next. How old is Gabe? I mean, he's going nowhere. He's younger than Kalohe, right? Or similar.
I would say he's younger, maybe 25.
Yeah,
and Kalohe's 27.
And something. So I wonder if Kalohe can just put on the Rocky soundtrack and just like do it, like go just punch him right in the mouth.
Does he? I mean, he doesn't seem to have the vitriol required. That's right. And I think you look at Kelly's career, and Kelly was he's willing to throat stomp people along the way. Like, it did not matter. Yeah, everybody. Personal relationship. Like, he didn't need personal relationships. He's just going to go.
Yeah.
And I don't see Kalohe having that. And honestly, Julian Wilson, that's probably his plight as well, he's too pretty. He's too pretty, too much money, too much. You don't develop the kind of tenacity you need.
And Jordy too, oddly, even though Jordy is an ugly man, Jordy should have been able to figure out how to use his ugliness to his advantage to win.
All of this breaks my heart.
Yeah, Jordy. Because
I love those guys.
Pug-nosed Jordy.
I know.
At least Kalohe, and I mean, Kalohe's not super beautiful. Julian's straight up beautiful. Kalohe, I'd give Kalohe a good 7 these days, though.
Very handsome man.
Handsome man.
He's too handsome to win a world title.
Yeah, barely. He's on the cusp of being too handsome.
Jordy, so how did Kelly get around all this?
Because Kelly is just like a demon. Kelly is possessed. Kelly is a you know, once in a era, whatever. Look at Tom Brady. How did Tom Brady, such a beautiful man, claw his way from 7th round draft pick or whatever he was into the winningest quarterback ever? Married to Giselle.
Yeah.
Life on a platter. I think Tom Brady's folks are like Berkeley professors or something. I mean, like, smart child, you know, upbringing.
There's always the one off that it's just like a preternatural talent.
That's it. That's
Kelly. John Jones as a fighter, you know, or whomever. You just cannot. There's nothing you can even.
That's Kelly. But the disappointing thing is Jordy is totally ugly enough to be a champion.
He is.
I mean, he's got the burden of ugliness, and I don't know how the burden of ugliness. Maybe he's handsome for a South African. I mean, he's married to a total supermodel babe.
No, because look at Travis Logie's way more handsome than Jordy.
Well, Smith. And so is Michael Febb.
Yeah, exactly. So Jordy's not handsome for a South African.
He's got those nipples.
Yeah.
When was the last time you thought about Jordy's nipples?
I think about them pretty regularly, actually. Whenever I read Beach Grit comment section, I'm reminded. By the way, Jordy does have one distinction that no other pro surfer in the world has.
Hmm.
he has an air freshener.
Oh, he does have an air freshener.
He has his face on an air freshener.
Go get it at the Beach Grit store. The Beach Grit store is now open, everyone, where you can buy your Jordy Smith air freshener, and it comes in Heartbreak Beach scent.
Beautiful, beautiful scent.
Yeah.
Your daughter wanted to eat it.
Yeah, she did. She did. Oh, I'm worried that she's going to find them and eat Heartbreak Beach scent. Real quick, though, we're on to Kelly. Kelly also blew out earlier than he would have liked this event. This event seemed really custom made for Kelly. Shifty peaks, hard to read, etc., etc. Kelly, more and more, I think, is like, strangely, you would think that winning a title at 50 would be enough motivation for Kelly, or beating Gabe or something. Kelly seems like he just loves to make it hard for himself when the conditions are so teed up perfectly for him. Same in Tahiti.
How do you feel he made it hard for himself?
I just feel he like rides goofy and like his head's not in the game. He just doesn't do the stuff that he has. He could do anything that would get him. He could Kelly at weird shifty peaky Tosker, wherever they were, La Gruyere.
Yeah,
he could find the right waves.
I think there was so much left to chance in a 30 or 40 minute, whatever, however long they gave those heats. There's just so much left to chance out there. Like, you can go completely starved. I mean, Gabe won a heat with an 8-point heat total. You know, like, you can get starved for waves, or you can get 10-point rides.
That's true.
So I really don't feel like it was necessarily in Kelly's hands. But, and by the way, Leonardo beat him with 40 seconds left and lucked into an 8, which, I mean, that was the only 8 that was available through that heat. I don't know if you're aware, but Leonardo is Stephen Bell's stepson.
Of course.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there's the Kelly connection there. But what's sad to me is that Kelly, we're watching Kelly go down not at the top of his game.
Yep.
You know, like, he's been losing these early round heats to no-name guys who are ranked 40th. You know, Leonardo, because he's been injured. But even still, he loses early rounds to no-name guys regularly for the past 3 to 5 years.
So two notes here. Interesting. I don't know if you saw. Well, first, I was looking at the rankings today. John Florence, who stopped surfing a decade ago, is still going to make it to the Olympics. It's looking better and better, literally, again, with the literally, but literally, because this is literal, that right now, Kaloe is, I do believe, sitting at 5th, and John's at 8th. Kelly's at 13th. Seth Moniz might be at 11th. But, yeah, John
is at 8th.
A full, the second American. And Kolohe's on the drop too, right?
Yeah.
So Kolohe could theoretically drop below John, or very easily drop below John, which means John, who got hurt at, where did he get hurt? Margaret River?
Yeah.
Was it the third?
Brazil. Trying that air.
So the fourth event of the season is still in the title hunt. I mean, the Olympic hunt will be, I'm going to say, very likely
it's
on the Olympic team. Being hurt every event.
It's so insane.
How amazing is that? Does the American surfing, what is the American?
ISA.
But that's the International Surf Association. Oh, right, what's the American one? Is it Surfing America or something?
Yeah.
They must be looking at this horrified at the showing that they're going to make in Tokyo.
You know, it's an indictment of the ranking system that you can lose. You cannot show up for that many events and still be ranked in the top 10.
He's in the top 10. John Florence is a top 10 surfer. I mean, also shows what a Terry was on at the start of the year. That's the, like, I was so not about the, obviously, Gabe wins a title. There's no, whoever wins the title this year, there's no asterisks, right? Like, no. The winner's the winner. Stuff happens. People get hurt.
Right.
But man, was John on a tear.
Yeah, he really was. That's the thing. Talking about, like, it doesn't matter, like, you need grit to win a world title or whatever. John's one of those examples where he's just gonna win. Like, yep. He has enough talent alone to win.
It's gotta be, I mean, it'll be exciting next year if John chooses to continue to compete and gets all better. It'll be real fun. John v Gabe, both really at the height of their games. I mean, I guess gotta give John time to dust off the rust, but that John versus Gabe, to me, is the most exciting head-to-head in surfing history. I'm gonna say it's better than Andy.
Really?
And Kelly. Yeah, because there's more at stake. I feel, I mean, Kelly and Andy was good, those are good runs, right? And we haven't seen, as a big call, I get it, because we haven't really seen a healthy John John and a healthy Gabe go head to head. But I mean, just the way they serve.
I disagree. None of that, what happens in the water doesn't matter. What we liked about Andy and Kelly is knowing that there's stuff behind the scenes that they're angry about. I don't feel like John John has any ire at all towards Gabriel. And Gabe, we make him the villain because we don't have like a proper villain, but he hasn't really done anything villainous other than backpaddle people.
Well, he runs over people and he like airs into people's faces.
I know, but I want to know that he's like trying to bang somebody's girlfriend.
Well, that's the media's job. That's search journalist's job. We'll go uncover like dirty, dirty things that Gabe's doing. We'll make Gabe the villain.
But we need, on the other hand, John John to have some sort of ire. John John is too aloof.
Well, I think we in the media can figure out how to give John John ire and also how to dig up enough dirt on Gabe to make him like a international supervillain.
What would get John John's goat?
Maybe if Gabe sunk his boat.
Okay.
Something.
All right.
What would get... Yeah, we'll figure that first.
It has to be a family related. His tight with his family.
So we take out his family?
No, Gabriel does.
Gabriel?
Gabriel would have to do something to
Ivan.
Offend John John's family.
Okay. Well, I feel we can make this happen. We have time. We have time to make this happen. One other note here. Back to Kelly real quick. Swinging back around. So yesterday, I do believe it was announced that HBO, I'm assuming in association with the World Surf League, is doing a 24/7 on Kelly Slater.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched the HBO 24/7s?
I have not.
Oh, they're fantastic. I mean, I watched... Remember way back when it was, I think, Oscar De La Hoya versus... Who was first, I think I watched the first 24/7. And it was epic, right? Like, well done, well done sports documentary. Following the two fighters. It was Oscar versus... Who's the Puerto Rican guy? Can't remember. Yeah. One, some other fighter, right? Yeah. Following them both around. They've done them for Mayweather. Like, really great, right? Where you get to see inside the boat, the training camps, all that stuff.
Which for 1 week, 24 hours a day.
Exactly.
And it's
no, it's longer than a week. It's 24/7 for, I think it's longer than a week.
Cause I know they've had cameras following Kelly like for the last few months,
but this one claims that they're, I mean,
it's centered around Pipe.
And it's centered around Pipe. Right. So I was assuming it was only going to be Pipe. So maybe if they're following him now, then it must be longer than Pipe. The problem, not that there is a problem, but there is a problem. There was always built in like real native drama and tension in every 24/7 I've watched, right? It's either two fighters fighting with a lot on the line. There's always something on the line. What's on the line for Kelly? There's nothing on the line. And so I'm curious because they're going to have to totally manufacture some tension and drama because there's no tension and drama. Right. Kelly's not zero prayer for title. Is, you know, slipping down or what is now sitting 13th is like a full-on pedestrian surfer, more or less. There's moments of excitement. And I'm not saying that Kelly should get off tour, but wouldn't a more interesting 24/7 subject have been Medina? Or really lock into Medina and Philippe? Or I guess obviously Kelly has the brand recognition, but I just don't see any tension. He's kind of
completely living
his way through.
No, I think the only tension is, can he win Pipe again?
But
and that's not even that tense.
Who cares? I mean, it's great.
He cares. Yeah. He's the one that cares. None of us really care.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a bit of a gaffe for the WSL or HBO, whoever chose Kelly. I get it. He's the ambassador. But it's not even like, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be the storylines about this 50-year-old. We've never seen a 50-year-old do this.
Right.
All that's true, but none of that... There's no drama in that. Yeah, totally. Great. Look at that 50-year-old. I mean, good on him. So, well, we can all stand and applaud Kelly Slater being 50 and still serving at a high level. But where's the drama?
Also, even if they pick Gabe, where's the drama?
I mean...
We need a foe.
That's the beauty, though, would have been a 24/7, if John John was healthy. Again, John John versus Gabe would have been absolutely fantastic. Yeah. But this one on Kelly, again, Kelly has no... There's no foe for Kelly either. Everybody's like, oh, good on you, Kelly. I'm sure people wish Kelly well when he paddles out. And nobody's trying to take Kelly down. I mean, they'll take him down in a heat if they have to. But it's not like anybody's going out and gnashing their teeth.
I'm
going to go get that 50-year-old.
Kelly's only foe for the last 5 years has been his own diffused interest in winning another world title. And his focus on Outer Known, his focus on wave pools, his focus on his personal life, all of that has distracted him enough to not win.
Well, and I'll say Kelly, for a while there, got on silly enough surfboards to degrade his own surfing, yeah. like that was kind of hard to come back from. I mean, what he was playing around with, all great, right? I mean, go experiment with strange shapes and interesting new technologies and all that. Like, nothing against those boards, and I'm sure those boards, his Kelly Slater, what are they called? Kelly
Slater, Slater Designs.
Slater Designs. I'm sure they're fantastic, right? Like, I've never surfed one, but I don't imagine that they are bad boards. I would imagine even that they're wonderful boards, but they very clearly, in the early R&D years, why are you doing R&D on the tour, right?
Well, he's still doing R&D. Yeah. I mean, because a lot of the boards that he rides, even with that logo on them, aren't ones that are available on retail shelves. Like the Aquila IPA stuff earlier this year, he's just testing that stuff out.
Which, and I think Kelly gets ahead of Kelly in terms of how brilliant he is, where I think a lot of that stuff, sure, he knows surfboards way better than me, way better than probably a lot of people, but very clearly, I think, and we'll look at this back half of his career when it's all over, and I think we could say Kelly left X, I bet we can come up with a number of heat wins and even contest wins that Kelly left on the table because he was goofing around with silly, with equipment that wasn't either right or dialed in or fully baked.
The conversation that's come up a number of times when I talk to shapers is, you just look at the stats, like who are the people winning world titles, and they have very, very long-term relationships with shapers.
Kavianca. So,
yeah. John and Paizel, Stephanie and DH, Kelly and Al.
And, you know, and
it takes that level of kind of refinement in your designs.
And it may be boring, like it may not be interesting. It's not like all of a sudden people are coming out with crazy snub nose boards or whatever. It's like a tiny little fraction shaved off here, but that's how good the surfer is, and that's how good the shaper is, I think, in those relationships, to know, okay, man, I could get John, you know, like a milli whatever, tiny little bit of more power if I shave a tiny little bit here. Right? It's still just a boring old thruster from the looks, but
But when you're at that level, those things are Ferraris. They're race cars. Yep. And with race cars, you're just dealing with those millimeters.
And Kelly, to his credit, you know, I got bored, I guess, of surfing thrusters and went out and busted the mold. But it did not serve him competitively.
No, it hasn't. One other note on the Quick Pro France. Carissa Moore won. How does she not win every single event?
She is so... When you watch her surf...
It's crazy.
When you watch her surf well... Oh, see, here we go. Back to 24/7. I would have way rather had a Carissa Moore, Steph Gilmore 24/7 or something like that, right?
Where, though? At Honolulu Bay? Like leading into Honolulu?
Maybe.
I don't know. That wave's... There's no consequence in the wave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when it gets big, it's pretty... It's fun. It's beautiful to watch.
Yeah, but it's not pipe.
It's not pipe. It's,
people die at pipe.
The... what's her name?
Riss.
Our good friend Rissa.
Yeah.
Riss Moore. She rips.
She's that much better than everybody else.
But Steph.
Steph's on her own, like, style kind of grace plane, but Carissa shreds.
Well, what about Caroline, her second place?
It's great.
Vanquished foe.
Great to see Caroline making her way up the ranks, but
Carissa like, rips.
The complete package.
How many has Carissa won, Riss, our best
World
friend?
Titles?
My best friend, Riss, yeah.
I feel like four.
Four?
Maybe three.
I think, and I don't think that I'm the first one to have this thought, but the person who is going to beat Kelly's 11 is going to be a woman. It's either going to be Steph or best friend Riss.
Steph has much closer.
Steph has seven.
Yeah.
Steph, I mean, obviously has best friend Riss in the way. Steph would have to reel off six.
Steph would have to learn how to do airs.
Oh, wait. Six. How many would Steph have? What's she'd seven have minus?
12. So she'd have five. Five more.
Five more.
Yeah.
She could rip a fiver.
She could. She has to figure out how to do airs. That would be the key.
You think?
Yeah. Because like her surfing's obviously beautiful, but she needs to find a new gear. Like we've seen what she can do. What's her next thing?
24/7 me on that one right there, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Taking Steph down and really saying, okay, you are the premier female, one of the premier surfers in the world, right? You're within spitting distance of the overall title. Do you want it? Do you want to find that next gear within yourself and go snatch?
That's the other thing is those, I don't feel like any of the female surfers have that tenacity, like that real
they must
ire.
I think they must.
They're so nice.
I think Carissa and all of them have it, the like the bitchy gear that only women could find in their hearts. That they go down, they go down and mine it when they need it.
I see it in Courtney.
Yeah.
Maybe even Tati.
Courtney had a banger heat. Did you see her heat?
That 10?
Oh my goodness. That was sick. That was a 10-10. I mean, that was a 10 in any heat on any side of the draw.
That thing was sick.
Yeah.
She backdoored that. It's like a left.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on Rip Curl being sold for 350 mil?
Good on him. Yeah. You know, I like funny. I've had in my own heart beef with Rip Curl since the McFanning days, like as a brand. Like I was just like, oh, come on, you know, about the whole thing, about the brand and the way the brand reacted to that whole thing. And so I was never a fan of the brand until very recently, pre the sale to Kathmandu. And I think it was Derek who sat me down. So there's an epic brand. Like it's been wholly owned, you know, by surfers. It's a surfer surf brand. And so then I thought, well, what's my problem? Boo on me. So good on Rip Curl. And yeah, it seems like they sold to a partner who will continue that ethos, right? I mean, a New Zealand based outdoor thing seems like a good fit. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Kathmandu, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know what that means for Rip Curl, how it's going to change the company or...
Rip Curl seems like it has would have a bigger imprint than Kathmandu, right? Unless Kathmandu is making stuff that...
I guess.
That I am not aware of under a different name.
Dude, I have no idea.
I don't see Kathmandu, but I don't shop.
Right.
And outdoor...
Nor do I.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it means for Rip Curl, but I do agree with your kind of philosophy of like, look, good job, you guys. You did a lot of hard work for 50 plus years or whatever the number is. And yeah, retire.
It's got to be.
Make some money and retire.
It's got to be so satisfying to have done it and then, you know, finally be able to tap out.
Totally. I'm really of the impression nowadays that companies have a lifespan. And when I was a kid, I just thought like, oh no.
Sell out.
Longevity is, you know, companies can be around forever. And now you see stuff come and go so quickly, certainly in the tech sector, that you realize, no, it's okay to work super hard for 5 or 10 years or whatever it is and then move on to something else that you're passionate about.
Well, and I think that Rip Curl, I don't know if Kathmandu is publicly traded.
I don't think it is.
I hope it's not, exactly, because that's what screwed Quiksilver and the rest of them, right? Yeah. Is when they went public, now when you're beholden to shareholders... Shareholders ain't surfers, and now you're screwed. It's really hard to stick around, but I bet Rip Curl can be a legacy surf brand, you know, moving forward, making quality stuff, have quality, you know, surfers running the show.
Yeah.
All that.
Speaking of these things, are you and Derek on the payroll from the WSL?
You like that rumor? How good is that one? I wish. Dude. I wish. Crazy Ben Marcus came up with that one.
He was
flogging that thing.
And I was then, in Europe.
Derek wrote a funny, or Surf Ads wrote a very funny story about it.
I was in Europe and somebody's like, dude, you're not going to believe this. This comment got posted in the comment section and then it got deleted. And the fact that it's deleted makes me think that it's true. But are Derek and Chaz getting paid by the WSL? What was the origin of... Where did Ben write it? Was it in the comment section?
It was in the comment section, yeah.
He was emailing...
I mean, Ben Marcus... Oh, I don't even want to talk about that, man. But he emails... Do you get his emails?
No.
You're probably going to now. He emails like a crazy fool and will just CC everybody on there. And it's just like random who knows what. Like it's... I mean, I to be honest, they go to my junk mail, so okay. I rarely see them anymore. But so he was... emailing that out to who have Bob McKnight at Quiksilver. Like he's always has like a long Kelly's always on his email chain. So he was emailing that out that the Beach Grit had pulled the wool over everybody's eyes this whole time, that we were a negative shill. He called it like, you know, all publicity is good publicity. The WSL set Beach. It was the WSL set Beach Grit up, you know, all these years ago in order to bring the negative publicity, because you need both negative and positive publicity, whatever. It was funny.
He's not wrong.
It was a funny, no, it was a, and it was a whole funny concept, and Surf Ads just wrote it way funnier than Ben Marcus ever, or way more coherently than Ben Marcus ever could. But yeah, very, very funny, and I'd so wish, if the WSL was that prescient, because I think someone, Preston, in the comments said, like, if this was to be true, the WSL would have had to set Beach Grid up a year before WSL became a thing. Right. But if they were that prescient and that into, yeah, I mean, then it would be the best brand. WSL would be the best brand ever. If they bought me and Derek off, or owned me and Derek, best brand ever.
Yeah, it was funny. I got that rumor and I didn't really give it any credence. Like, it wasn't, but a part of me thought,
maybe
I wanted to believe it, kind of. Like, I was just like, ooh, this level of like diabolic scheming and lying
would be really
interesting. It's fun.
It would make the WSL so much more interesting than it is.
Yeah, I mean, it was just more interesting.
If they had that in them, it would have been epic.
Yeah. Yeah.
WSL, you can still do it.
It makes me want to start scheming.
Yeah. That's the thing, is you need money to scheme. The WSL, the one thing they have is money through Dirk Ziff. And so why aren't they scheming? Mm. Like, why are they doing weird collabs with Bond University in the Gold Coast of Australia and other things like this? Strange. They do strange things with Ziff's money.
Yeah.
Bizarre things.
Hmm.
Where they should be scheming.
Well, I'm disappointed. Things. Disappointed that
me too.
We don't have anything more exciting. And then secondly, that you guys aren't lining your pockets.
Me too.
Sorry.
Very disappointed.
Bummer. Gonna have to sell a bunch of air fresheners now.
Huge. I know. It's Heartbreak Beach scent. Go buy, people.
What else you got in the BG shop?
We have t-shirts in the BG shop. We have tail pads in the BG shop. We have a limited edition mug. I think there was only 25 ever made.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, it's going to be like a Supreme item. Like,
holy cow.
Very, yeah, very exclusive. Jump on the mug.
And for anybody who is even contemplating not jumping on the mug, think about the BG board shorts that I own.
Precisely.
That are collector's items.
Fully right collector's
items. And everybody else is wishing they had them.
Beach Grit is basically the Supreme of surf.
It is.
Very limited edition runs that people want everything once it's gone.
For sure.
The the store, I'm so happy to have the store up there. I want, like, it's going to evolve. I think the stuff that's going to come in
is... It's way overdue, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, way. And it just makes me happy that, I don't know, there was... I think in that Surf Ads, in that same story, wrote about the WSL owning Beach Grit, about how horrible advertorial is. Just what a crime and sin advertorial is, where you break down the wall between church and state, between editorial and commerce, and just make it all one ugly, tepid stew.
Yeah.
And so I like that I can't help it at Beach Grit, right? We can't help it. I mean, if a story comes up, we have to write it. Like yesterday, looking, you know, possible money in the eye and just throwing it in the trash and lighting it on fire with the Vans story, but knowing that that's a story, right? Like Vans pulled a shoe out of a competition because it had a reference the Hong Kong protests, and you know, because they were scared of, I'm sure, aggravating the potential Chinese consumer. So I have to write that story, even if it means pissing away ad money. But
Vans pulled a shoe out of contest.
Yeah, so he's in a contest, right?
Submit your art on a Vans shoe,
exactly.
And whichever one wins, we'll put into production.
I think the gets put into production. I think the winner of the contest gets $25,000, and you know, gotcha. It's a Vans custom culture contest. I think it's been I think it's been around for a while, and so this shoe was in this. Particular shoe was in the lead or near the lead, right?
Because it was referencing the protests in Hong Kong.
And it's a beautiful shoe, right? Okay. I mean, the art is amazing. It's just a good looking shoe. And of course, everybody's stepping, you know, NBA, Apple, everybody's stepping in this Hong Kong business right now. But I would just love for one company to stand up and say, no, forget it. Forget, you know, we're going to lose billions of dollars by standing up to China. But our fundamental belief that people have a right for expression or to express themselves, that's not for sale. And so even if it means billions lost, then billions are lost. And I was chatting with Derek yesterday, and his whole thing is just, how much money do you need? How much money do you need? Apple, one of the biggest companies in the entire world. how much money do you need, right? Like, you need all this extra Chinese money? Just say, no, we're standing on principle. And all these companies, too, love to, you know, make the biggest deals of, you know, whatever gender equality and whatever trans issue and whatever gay this and, you know, all that stuff, which is all important. I'm nothing against that. But when it comes to actually standing up for fundamental human rights, then everybody gets real shy all of a sudden. And it personally frustrated me to see Vans even look like that's what they're doing, because, you know, Vans is ours, I think. I mean, of course it's a publicly traded, you know, VF Corp, blah, blah, blah. But Vans comes from our world. And, you know, I just, oh man, just to pull a punch and claim that, well, you know, we don't do anything political. But since when is freedom of expression political?
Right. And they weren't the ones making the statement anyways.
No. And no. And just say no, China. Yeah. Like, this is who we are as Westerners. Like, this is what it looks like. And, oh my goodness, everyone just bowing. You see how the future is going to be. Everyone bowing so quickly to Chinese demands without even trying to put up a fight. Like, at least the NBA said, no, our players can say whatever they want, but right. There's going to be no more press conferences in China in the NBA over the next 2 days or whatever. Like, just straight up moral capitulation, which is disgusting.
Yeah, I agree.
Soapbox.
The soapbox is where the best content comes from. You texted me about Derek's new book. I know nothing about it.
Yeah.
Fill me in.
Genius. Derek just published a book. I think it came out last weekend, maybe, or this weekend. New release, or soon to be released in Australia. Gul Palil, legendary Aboriginal actor, dancer, I think, too. Like, legendary Australian character. He was in Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, Derek wrote another. Derek backed up his Bob Hawke biography, which was a massive hit, and, you know, so well received with a book that I think is, I mean, from critical acclaim so far, even better. Derek Riley.
So have you read it?
I haven't read it yet. Copy? No, okay. No. I'm cool. Going to. I can't wait to read it.
All right. We'll look forward to that. We'll advertise it.
Yeah.
Might be available in BG shop.
I hope so.
I would hope so too.
Yeah.
Biggest compliment you've ever been paid, Chaz?
Biggest compliment I've ever been paid, that I looked like creepy Matthew McConaughey in and bad Matthew McConaughey, not clean cut Matthew McConaughey, okay. but bad Matthew McConaughey in True Detective, where he's all skitsy and playing with beer cans and all that kind of stuff. Best.
Who gave you the compliment?
It was
Was it a stranger or somebody you knew?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was the cashier checkout person at Party City.
Okay.
Yeah, buying a Halloween costume
for
a daughter. So
they said, you look like Matthew McConaughey, but specifically
in True Detective. Exactly. Look at my, and then the way I was looking too, I got a haircut yesterday, so I was even shaggier. And he said everything. Yeah, oh, I knew, because he said the mustache, the hair. So it wasn't, because if anybody's seen True Detective, you know, it follows young Matthew McConaughey and old creepy Matthew McConaughey, and, like, looking very cancer-ridden Matthew McConaughey. That's how I look.
That's
best compliment ever.
It's a real backhanded compliment. It's like, you look like Christian Bale. Oh, do I? In The Machinist.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. But still, I totally took it, and not only took it, the best compliment I've ever received. What's yours?
I've gotten a bunch, but one of which that would kind of relates to yours was Matthew Perry from Friends, Chandler from Friends. And then my follow-up question is, like,
which version?
Like, the coked-out version or the overweight version? Because there was a bunch of different Matthew Perrys.
What do they say? Do they like, oh, you're the good one. Laugh. The good one.
Yeah, they laugh. And go, oh, yeah. I mean, the handsome one, you know? Side note, I was dating a girl a while back who one of her best friends met and dated Matthew Perry on Tinder. Like, they connected on Tinder.
And dated.
Dated him for 3 months. And fun fact, he never has sex without his shirt on.
Really?
He only has sex wearing a t-shirt.
That totally seems frenzy, doesn't it?
It kind of does.
I mean, it seems like a Friends episode. The one where Monica wants Matthew Perry to take his shirt off and he refuses.
That's hilarious. Well,
that's a great fun
fact.
Isn't
that crazy?
This is the I think the best nugget of information that's ever been presented on this show.
Yeah. Matthew Perry only has sex with his shirt on.
Man world.
Yeah. And it was because, and it was, like, kind of sad.
Yeah.
She was saying it was basically sad. Like, he's not in his prime anymore. Like, he's a little bit overweight.
Is it body issues?
Yes.
So he keeps. So does he always keep his shirt on, or is he just in a "I'm feeling bad about my body, so I'm going to keep my shirt on" season right now?
I don't know.
Do you sleep with a shirt on at night?
No.
What do you think about men who sleep with shirts on?
I have no opinion on it.
Really?
Yeah.
I always think men who sleep with t-shirts are wackos, but men who sleep in full pajamas, like a silken button-up Hugh Hefner pajama, I'm two thumbs up on that and hope to join you someday. But
the button-up pajama is such a funny concept.
It's so epic, though. Like,
it's a suit. It's designed after a suit.
Completely. I am so down with a silk button-up pajama for sleeping, for sleepwear. But the man who puts a t-shirt on to go to bed, and worse, socks, the man who sleeps in socks, that man, you lose your man card.
He's a serial killer.
He's something. Yeah. I don't like
sociopath.
It. I don't like
if it. If he hasn't killed three people yet, he's bound to in the future.
T-shirt.
It's an indicator.
T-shirt too, though. Like, seeing a man shuffle around in boxers and t-shirt, bedtime.
Yeah.
Is the absolute, it's, what is the, who is are so you? Fun. Who are you?
Do
you?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's awful.
Well, we live in Southern California where it's warm all the time.
Don't care. If it's too cold, then like, get your button-up pajamas. I mean, get flannel pajamas. Hat.
What about the sleeping cap? That all was like that. Pointy,
sure.
With a little ball on yep. it. How silly is that?
I'm good for
what
all of that.
What purpose did any of that serve?
It must have been, they must have had like powdered wigs or something and got like Maybe. Powder all over their pillows or something.
I feel like people used to have a lot more dignity and like
in
pride.
Bed.
No, with all things. Like yeah. if they flew on an airplane, they wore a suit. Go to bed, you get dressed up for bed.
You know? Yeah, getting dressed up for bed with a nice pair of leather slippers. I mean, I need to go down this path. But again, listeners out there, male listeners who wear t-shirts to bed, shame, for shame.
Yeah.
Shame on you.
So last night I could have been wearing a t-shirt because
you were
I
cool?
got woken up by these beautiful Santa Ana winds.
Oh man, they're howling out
Went
there.
Went to bed, there was no wind. In the middle of the night, because I leave my window open, my curtain was like kind of blowing. I could hear it rustling and I was getting hit by that wind, but it's warm. Wind.
Yeah. Santa Ana. Santana's yeah. playing right now. Carlos Santana.
We just need some swell.
Yeah, is there no swell? There's no swell. I should know.
Last night I checked it and it was like 2 feet. I was kind of waiting for the wind to switch last night.
Did you surf since you've been back from Europe?
No.
So
I got home 3 or 4 nights ago and no, I haven't. Ooh. But I surfed one day
in Europe,
in Portugal.
Nice. Where? Bar,
Aracera.
Oh, nice.
Right where that QS, the QS yeah. was happening mm-hmm. at the same time. But I borrowed a board and a wetsuit. Like I wasn't traveling.
What'd you surf? What'd you borrow?
I forget the guy's name that shaped it. But it was like a 6'3" tri fin
standard,
or like a not really standard. Like the tail was real narrow with a swallow in it and a little hip.
Fun.
It was the wrong board for the conditions, but
wasn't your mid-length?
Was not my mid-length. And the place I surfed, the mid-length would have been perfect. I was
how big is
it.
Your mid-length? I was thinking that damn Devin Howard was right, that he was going to get me on a mid-length. I've had a total, now I'm back to shortboard land.
Are
I'm
you?
A shortboard supremacist. Yeah. I am never going to get off my shorty.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well,
good. Mid-length.
You're going to not get as many waves.
Don't then. Care.
Yeah.
I'll feel good on the waves I get. I'm surfing again a lot.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm back.
How's it feel?
Good. It took me this long to actually get full pop, but now I don't think about the last couple times I've surfed. I realized after getting out of the water that I didn't think about popping up the entire time.
You're thinking about popping up?
With the shoulder, because it was so bulky that my pop-up was so delayed that it would get me in my head, right? Where I physically couldn't pop up.
I feel quick. Like you could write an article for the Inertia right now.
I mean, that's totally an Inertia style article, but it's gone.
Talking about nursing your old man injury so that you could improve your pop up.
I wasn't nursing it. It was just an old man injury that didn't allow me to pop up, and it got in my head because I was thinking about popping up. Then right, like a wave is coming and I think, oh man, it's going to take me. It's like kind of ledging. I'm not going to be able to pop up in time. To make this drop, but now all gone. I'm back.
Okay, good.
I'm cruising.
Good. So this is a happy
cruising
story.
On my proper shortboard. I even brought my album shortboard to see if Matt's here, to see if I could swap it and ride another one for 8 months.
He's in France.
Damn it!
He's in France with Josh Kerr and.
Well, good on you.
Spoiler alert: Asher Pacey.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
So good. I'm gonna try to connect with Asher when he comes back through.
It's exciting.
Interview.
Is Asher Pacey an album writer too?
I cannot confirm nor deny.
Wow.
That.
Exciting.
And I don't know if what is... I mean, even if he's writing an album right now, I don't think they have like any formal agreement or anything like that. But I would imagine if they're all together in France, he probably is.
Give Asha Pacey 1 to 10.
In terms of...
However you want. Looks, ability, whatever you want to rate.
I'm going to go as close... I'm going to go 9.5.
Oh, you're
a fan.
Big fan of Asha Pacey.
So he revitalized my interest in the fish.
Mm, yeah.
If you've seen him ride those fish, and they were DHDs at the time, just... Crushing. Having a ball, like surfing everywhere that he wanted to go on the wave, just going there, like instantly, board responding, super stylish, felt relatable, you know, in a way that I watch Italo and I just can't relate at all. Asher, it's like, oh, if I slimmed down, got on a vegan diet, I could surf like that.
Do you have a fish in your quiv?
Yeah.
What is your fish?
Like it's a Roger Hines Seal Beach Shaper. It was a 5'4", I believe, just standard keel fin.
Glassed on fins?
No, actually. They're futures.
Mm. The only fin worth riding.
Yeah, I agree. But I rode that board all summer long because of Asher.
Okay.
You know, like literally, that's the only board I rode for 3 months.
Did when you're on a fish for a while and then you go back to a more traditional shortboard, do you feel like what? Do you feel the fish has handicapped you?
No, I don't. But I feel sharp as a tack on the shortboard after the fish.
Yeah.
For sure. Get on the short. And the reason why I would get on a shortboard is if the waves are good. And so then it's the right board for the conditions. And I'm shocked how, you know, you can blow the tail out. You can go vert.
Yeah.
Like I'll look at a lip that's would be require you to get up there instantly. And the shortboard gets there instantly. Whereas the fish wants to track more to like the shoulder. Well, since we could almost put the pajama conversation in barrel or gnaw,
yeah,
going gnaw, but I've got three barrel or gnaws
for you to close out on. Excited.
All right. Barrel or gnaw, owning swords.
Oh, guess who owns a sword? Me.
Do you really?
Yeah, like some Japanese katana or something. I was given it as a gift.
God.
So I'm going to, since I own one, and apparently, like, I got it when I was teaching at LA City College or something. So it was a student, must have been a Japanese student, gave me a Japanese sword.
That's as, like, such a bizarre gift.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of like, thank you for the teaching English. Here's a sword.
Oh, my God.
But I've kept it all these years. So I must appreciate people who have swords and or swords.
Did he have a crush on you?
No, I got a lot of gifts, oddly.
Really?
I get a bunch of brandy. A lot of brandy for some reason. I wasn't a brandy drinker. Never
acted like one. Was it poisoned? Did you actually drink it?
I would. It was, a lot of it was Arminian brandy. I'd have a lot of Arminian students.
Weird.
Yeah, I'd get a lot of food. I taught adult like ESL, English as a second language learners too. And those the Arminian moms and Persian moms and stuff, we're just so happy. I think I gave them, or I don't think, I gave them all A's. I never made them do any work at all. Like, come on, I'm going to browbeat like this Armenian grandma. And they would be so happy that I would have more food every day after class than I would know what to do with. I mean, just a whole table full of food that I'd have to pack up and take home. And then at the end of class, just bottles of brandy, Japanese swords, all kind of random stuff.
That's so random.
I had a whole basement filled with student gifts at some point.
Was that your strategy? Was like, look, I'm going to reduce my food budget and alcohol spending this year by giving people A's?
I didn't think about it at all because I didn't drink the brandy rarely. I mean, I'm not a brandy guy, and especially not Armenian brandy. But then, and the food was fine, but it's not, I mean, you know, I would, oh yeah, I might eat some and then, you know, take it home but most of it would probably get tossed, because I didn't like it. Just, yeah, no, I didn't think of anything. Oh, the only thing I thought was as mean to give old women failing grades. Grade. Yeah.
That's so funny. Well, I'm going, it's, you only own one sword.
Yeah. It came in a set of three. So at some point I had three, but I have one left.
What happened to the other two?
I don't know.
Huh.
I must've got lost in the move. Yeah.
That is such a bizarre answer to this question.
Yeah. Swords.
Wow. Okay.
Barrel.
I'm going nah.
Yeah, yeah. I see.
People that collect swords are so freaking weird, dude.
I see how you think that.
I came across a couple of swords while I was in Europe. like in museums, and they show you like whatever. And I thought to myself, huh, when I was a kid, I used to like swords.
Yeah, you'd want want that sword.
Go to medieval times, and they'd have like a gift store, and they were selling swords. And when I was a kid, I was like, ooh, even if I could save the money to buy that, I don't think my parents would let me have it.
Yeah.
Because it's someone's going to get hurt no matter what. You get a sword as a kid, you want to swing the thing.
Sure.
And then I grew up, and I do not care about owning a sword at all. And then I was like, well, what if I did own a sword? Would I put it on a wall? And if I did, and a woman came over...
Your sword's on your wall.
Guaranteed, that's the end of the... That is the prophylactic.
My sword's on my bookshelf.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And that did not repulse your wife?
It should have. Met? It should have.
She was really not looking at you with a fine-tooth comb, I feel.
I definitely not. But I also think, though, if you just have your sword and you're, like, into your sword, then it's a pretty bold move. Like, not nerding out on it, not talking about it, but just like, yeah, it's my sword.
That is a super nerd move.
What is
the only thing that's worse is being into magic.
What is, or what about, I took the daughter to Disneyland a couple days ago, or a week ago, or whatever. They have that new Star Wars land there, right? So I went into Star Wars land at Disneyland. They have a shop that sells lightsabers, of course. But they also have like super high-end lightsabers there that were, I think there's like $300, $400, $500. Is it better to have a sword or a super high-end $400 lightsaber?
Honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this. Lightsabers.
Really?
Yeah.
That shocks me.
Yeah.
That is... lightsaber guy, the Star Wars super fan enough to buy a lightsaber, $300. I mean, that comes with a lot of baggage. Sword, maybe you're just into swords.
I bet you that there is a correlation between school shooters and owning swords. Like, if you look at all the school shooters, they probably have a sword collection at home.
You're probably right there.
Whereas owning a lightsaber just means you're into Star Wars.
Yeah, but I would rather be a school shooter than a Star Wars nerd.
Mm.
I mean, if we're going to go... if we're going to go the hierarchy of things that I would prefer not being, but if I had to be, I'd rather be a school shooter than a Star Wars nerd.
I think... So, with gun laws, we need to track people that are buying AR-15s, all that sort. We should also just be tracking people buying more than three swords.
In general. Across the board.
And then that'll mean that they're going to do something nefarious within the next 5 years.
Okay.
I think we could run those stats and they would flush out.
Sword owner. But I feel a lot of sword owners are like just kind of Dungeons and Dragons-y people who are like...
Those are the problems.
School.
Those are the problem children. That's exactly my point.
Okay. Yeah. Well, man,
you got to get rid of that sword.
I count myself amongst them. No, I'm counting myself amongst.
Wow.
All right.
I got to distance myself from you.
Yeah, me and Dylan, whatever, from Columbine. Dylan and it's probably not very cool.
Siebold?
It's probably not very cool to put yourself in the same category as those guys, huh?
It really isn't, but you did once you accepted that gift of a sword. All right then, barrel or nah? Keeping the foil sticker on your ball cap.
Oh, so nah times a trillion. I mean,
how did this even happen?
I assume it came. It must have come from either rap or NBA guy, right? Who did it, and then it caught on. But I don't know how it still has legs. Like, I get it as a trend to be different from whenever, but now that it's not a decade long trend or a thing that people have been doing for a decade. Why in the world do you want that there? I mean, I feel like
such an old man. I don't know how it even became a trend in the first place.
I mean, I get that, you know, like Crisscross wore their, remember Crisscross?
Yeah, they wore
Jim, wore the clothes backwards. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Like, it's probably one of those things, but I don't know how it stuck so hard.
I don't either.
It's bizarre to me. It's
stuck to the point that I think people don't even realize that you're supposed to take it off.
I feel like you see it more often than not, to be honest.
Totally.
You see the foil
thing,
especially if you see somebody wearing a new cap.
Yep.
I would say 8 times out of 10, it's got the foil sticker there.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Does
the foil sticker have status?
No, I don't think so.
It's really weird.
It's the lamest thing ever.
Does it just mean you take really good care of your hat? Like,
I don't think it means anything.
It must mean something. Somebody out there must know.
I think it means you're so dumb that you don't realize that's a sticker that you're supposed to remove with purchase.
No, it has to be a statement of some kind. I just don't know.
I'm so out of the loop then.
Yeah, it's a statement for sure. I'm going to say it's a statement for sure, but what the statement is, I have no idea.
Okay. I'm against it.
I feel, yeah, I'm against it too. I think it's a dumb, whatever the statement is at this point is so, I mean, it's just ugly to begin with. You have a giant price tag, more or less, on your hat.
Yeah. I remember when I was in elementary school, a kid showing up with new jeans that had the sticker, you know, it was like a long, narrow sticker that had the size of the jeans that ran down the leg, like 32 printed over and over. And he didn't realize that it was on the back of the leg where the knee folds. We ridiculed that kid for 3 months for leaving that sticker on his jeans.
I did you ever accidentally leave one of those on?
No.
I've been guilty as charged on that one.
Well, I just had hand-me-down jeans for my older brother, so the sticker was long gone.
I accidentally have done that as an adult, I think, too.
No way.
I mean, not recently, but yeah.
I didn't know the jeans still had those stickers.
Back when I was a poor English language professor, I think more than once I probably rocked the 32.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It was like jean brands that were sold at Sears.
It was like,
had those.
It was like, I think Gap and those guys had them too for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, or probably still do.
All right, so we're going Nah on the foil
sticker. Nah on the foil sticker.
All right, final barrel or Nah. This was a hot topic last week. Defecating in the lineup.
Yeah, who was it that did it? It was Griff Colapinto, paddled out the back, dropped the kids off at the pool, as he said, which was a great moment, I thought, to admit it on the interview.
Unsolicited.
Yeah.
Rosie didn't ask.
Have you ever done it?
No.
I've never done it either. I've thought that I needed to before, but couldn't force myself to do it in the water. I'm not going to go Nah. It's gross. I'm going to go Nah. Because it is gross. But yeah, like having the physical ability to do that, I'm going to say that's something. Good on you. You can mentally go there.
Why is it gross? Like, all of our sewage ends up in the ocean.
But processed-ish sewage and somewhere else, right? Like, where if people were doing it, for example, like Griffin, Colapinto, in an event, whatever, that's pretty awesome. Like, go psych your opponent out by just shitting right next to him. If that was a thing out at, like, you know, D Street or whatever, or Lowers, and people would do that, like, and there was, you know, every once in a while a poop floating through the lineup, that's pretty uncool.
Very uncool.
Like, getting, just think, paddling.
Dude, paddling the fact, through a wave, knowing that thing can pop up while you're duck diving in a wave in your face is horrifying.
And the thought of sewage is gross. Yeah. Right, that we're swimming in sewage, but somehow sewage doesn't feel as gross as a fresh human turd.
You're right, it doesn't.
Like, it's just, that's gross. And we've all been out in sewage, right? I mean, you know when you're surfing in sewage.
Yep.
But I've surfed in sewage and didn't like, ew, yucky, I'm getting out. Like, oh, there's a bummer and I might get sick, but it's fun. And so I'm staying on.
Here's what's weird about it is everyone poops.
Yeah.
Every single human being does. And yet we're still horrified at the thought of somebody else doing it.
Yep.
Or seeing it.
Yeah. It's gross.
It's a weird human thing that we have going on.
It's really gross.
Well, is it barrel or not that he admitted it and that he brought it up unsolicited?
1000% barrel. Everything he did was barrel.
Yeah.
Like, tip my foil stickered cap to Griffin Colapinto for that move. Great move. Great to talk about it. But the idea of doing that, or if that was a thing, again, I say that's not barrel. But again, I caveat with people who have the mental ability to do it, I just don't think I can. I think I could... I would be, you know, have raging diarrhea and still not mentally be able to.
Yeah. So the reason why I'm going to go Nah on this is, it's impractical. Like, he had a full suit on and he had to paddle out back, unzip your full suit, pull it off in the water that's cold enough to have a full suit on. You're going to take a fully submerged dump in freezing cold water, not freezing, but very cold water. And then how are you going to put your wetsuit back on? A soaking wetsuit that's then going to get filled with water. The whole thing's a nightmare.
Absolutely.
I would go in, take a dump, come back out.
But this is okay. The problem was that it was right before his heat, right? I think it was 2 minutes to go till his heat.
No, he said 10 minutes.
Did he say 10?
He said 10.
Okay, let's pretend. Okay, even at 10, you know what I would have done? I would have just shit in my suit. Who cares? It's your own shit. And
dude, that is so rank.
Oh, you just deal with it later.
No.
Yeah, you go, like, you keep your warm. You keep your core warm.
That's horrifying.
Did he lose that heat? Did he win that heat?
He won because he was being interviewed afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, no, I would have pooped right in my suit without even thinking about it.
Dude.
That's what I would have done.
That is the worst thing
I would have paddled out beyond the lineup a little bit.
It's going to get smashed into all of the fiber of your suit.
Hey,
there's no washing it out ever.
You're Griffin Cole Pinto. You've got Billabong suits around the block. You just, that's done. That you sacrifice that suit. It's over. It's done. Had a good run. You just enjoy that poop. It probably keep you warm. You don't
enjoy it. That's the point, is it's not enjoyable. You're only hurting yourself. It'd
probably keep you warm for a minute.
I'm going to say less than a minute.
But it'd be nice.
It's going to, no, it wouldn't be nice.
You could like squish on it on your board when you're sitting out there.
That is the problem, is it's not nice and it's not warm. Like urine's warm. We all pee in our wetsuits.
That's what I'm saying.
The joy of that.
I'm just saying I would rather poop my wetsuit than strip my wetsuit down and poop in the ocean.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll give you a third option.
Yeah.
Go in and poop in a toilet.
But let's pretend that's not an option.
It is an option. I don't want to pretend.
Okay. Here we go. If you were Griffin Cole Pinto, big heat. Say 10 minutes. But, you know, that especially that day, it was a hard paddle out, all that kind of stuff. You get out to the lineup, you realize, uh-oh. You know, if you go in, run up to the porta potties or whatever they are, do your business, run back, you're going to lose, say, 4 to 5 minutes of the heat. Would you rather lose 4 to 5 minutes of the heat than poop in your wetsuit?
Yes.
Or poop out the back? Not me.
Okay, so this doesn't apply because it takes 4 to 5 minutes to paddle out the back, pull down your wetsuit, and then put your wetsuit.
But I'm just saying, if the scenario was you can go in and poop all you want, but guarantee you're going to, you know, you're not going to be there for your full heat. You're going to miss a couple minutes best. You know, if you get a rough paddle out, could be up to 8 minutes.
I just don't want to play your game because, like, take a dump before your heat. But I would never end up in that situation.
But you should really, if you are in that situation, I think the best thing to do is poop in your wetsuit.
Wow.
That
I think that's the worst thing to do, no matter what the situation
is. I see no other option, to be honest, than just pooping in your wetsuit.
Man.
Because just think, Griff, you know, pooped in the ocean. I mean, I guess you get pretty clean out there, probably. You think,
Dude, if I'm out there, if I poop in my wetsuit, I'm going to stay out for an hour. Like, I'm going to pull down that wetsuit, flush it out. Like, that thing needs a full cleansing before I go in.
You just take care of that. You come in fully wetsuited. You go up to the showers.
Dude, you'll stink up. Everybody will know what's going on.
That's okay. Right?
I guess, honestly, more than
It won't stink because it'll be kind of cold at that point, too.
Dude, it'll stink.
I bet it won't stink that bad. I mean, depends on what you ate.
Depends, totally. Depends is a good sponsor for today's show. My problem is not so much offending other people. I'm mortified. I will make myself vomit. I have a low threshold.
Oh.
I have a low gag reflex.
Okay. So just smelling your own poop.
I would barf.
Coming up from your neck.
I think I will.
Wafting up.
I think if I was marinating in my own poo, I would barf.
Yeah, I wouldn't like it. Well, I mean, I would at that point. I would like it. If that was my decision and I had to make that decision, I wouldn't like to have to make that decision. But once I committed to it, I'd be like, hell yes. I would go paddle over. Who was he surfing against?
I forget.
I would paddle over to my competitor and say, guess what? I just literally shit my wetsuit. Yeah.
Well.
And you could too, it'd be even fun to pack a couple bombs, try to flush it a bit, right? Like, I mean, I think it would put you in a good headspace to go do what you needed to do out there. Man,
I think it would really do the exact opposite.
The fun would be if they zoomed in on him, like pumping down the line, you could see some draining out the leg, the bottom leg.
The barf right now, dude. Oh, what if it flushes up?
It won't. How many times does a wetsuit ever flush up?
Never. Yeah,
always flushes down. Yeah. And some genius part about wetsuits, I will say, no wetsuit has ever flushed up.
Yeah.
You could take the biggest, like, pin drop dive off the biggest wave and still not flush up.
Yeah.
You'd think that one of those would like kind of force water up, but no, water only ever goes down. So
my one other thought on this is we always want these surfers to express some sort of personality.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a bold move for Griff. Again, unsolicited.
Great call.
He just brought it up out of nowhere, threw Rosie off her game a little bit. And he's expressing something that is just different. Like, it's funny. It's going to go down like legendary.
It was a good look.
Yeah.
Good look for Griff.
So yeah. I'm all about it.
Barrels.
Yeah.
All right. Barrels all the way around.
Barrel. Just not in my lineup.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks to Album Surfboards for hosting us today, our studio.
Greatest surf shop in the world.
And check out BG, Beach Grit's shop for t-shirts, air freshener.
A mug.
Tail pads. The mugs are gone.
That quick.
The mugs are gone.
Hopefully, sure. Yeah. They're in a, some of them are probably in a museum at this point.
I would think so. And Chaz, I'll see you next Friday, right?
Yeah, we're Iron Man streak again.
I'm in.
Sweet.
100%. All right. Until next time, Chaz.
Get there. Someone's got